Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Good morning. Welcome to this edition of Atlanta Business Radio, powered by Business Radio X. I'm your host, Alex Gossett Shiflett, and welcome to our producer, Ryan Redhawk McPherson. How are you today, Ryan?
Wonderful. It's Wednesday.
Yes, hump day.
Yes, gotta love that.
We have two very special guests in our studio today, but before we get started, make sure you are connected with us on social media, Twitter, at Business Radio X. Also, today's show, Atlanta Business Radio, you can follow us at Atlanta Biz Radio, and you can connect with me personally on Twitter at Alex G. Shiflett. Love to hear from you, and you can check out the pictures of our guests in the studio today. Okay, our two guests today, we have Nancy Watley. Nancy is with Ignite HQ. Good morning, Nancy.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
And we have Andrew McConnell from Rented.
Yes. Good morning.
Good morning. Glad that you guys are here. We're going to start with you, Nancy. First of all, I love the name Ignite HQ. Tell us everything about it.
Well, Ignite HQ is relatively new, a hybrid of a co-working business incubator that has been created up in Cobb County in partnership with KSU, Kennesaw State University. And with all of the the resources available to startups in the internal side of Atlanta and Midtown and inside the perimeter, we decided it was time to do something outside the perimeter. So this is our kickoff this year.
Okay, so outside the perimeter.
Yes. Big news. We have just signed a lease, and our facility is going to be right off the square in Marietta, the famous historic square in Marietta. And it'll be kind of that urban feel in suburbia.
Okay. And so who will you be serving other than just Marietta?
Well, we will be serving the total Northern Arc.
Okay.
There's a lot of startup activity going on outside the perimeter. And with this being outside, we'll be able to service everything from, south of the city all the way around to Alpharetta. On that Northern Arc. And we'll be working with startups. We'll be working with mentors and advisors. We'll be working with folks who want to come in and sponsor and be part of companies that would like to see the innovation going on up there.
That's great. What sets Ignite HQ apart from other incubators?
Well, first is that we're outside the perimeter. That's, a little different. But more importantly, we, in partnership with Kennesaw State University, we will be working on or working with startups that or more along the lines of what you might find coming out of KSU. So engineering, architecture, clean tech, sustainability, that Internet of Things, cybersecurity, those are the types of degrees and the types of students that are coming out and what the professors are actually doing research on. So we'll be focusing on that. Our tagline is where inventors go. So that's kind of what we're looking for, is invention that can scale globally.
And it seems that you're very passionate about this. Why Ignite HQ?
Why me, Ignite HQ? The startup scene in Atlanta has grown so much over the last, several years. And it's a great way for students, for folks who are changing careers, for people wanting to do something different to have an opportunity. And creating a center like this gives a collaborative opportunity for people to come start a business without putting in a lot of extra money that they don't need to, just for a lease and things like that, so they can be together, collaborate, and enjoy building a business.
Okay. And you said that you are partnering with KSU and you are supported by the Cobb Chamber.
Yes. We were originally, the concept came from this public-private partnership that Cobb County and the Cobb Chamber did, creating a five-year strategic plan and recognizing that the jobs in the future, most of those were going to come from companies that didn't exist today. And so from an economic development perspective, they needed to start focusing on entrepreneurship and innovation. So as a result of that, They went to the state and said, hey, let's work on this for outside the perimeter in Cobb County, and let's work on economic development. And therefore, we were born. So we've now got a facility, and we're rocking and rolling.
Excellent. And what kind of inventions and businesses do you expect to see developing with Ignite HQ?
Well, I think you'll see a lot of things that come along the realm of energy efficiencies. I think you'll see things like solar energy coming out because they have a strong engineering school and construction management school. So some of that you might see a lot of that. We also have a strong cybersecurity in our Coles College of Business. The Coles College also has an entrepreneurship center that actually teaches students the concepts of entrepreneurship. So that's a beautiful thing as well. Again, I think you're going to see a lot of what you might find coming out of KSU. We do believe that in Cobb County, there are people who are tinkering in their basements. Mm-hmm. So things that require a prototype or things like that, which is a little different than just your sheer techie world, the apps and games. Although we do have a strong computer science and gaming college at KSU as well.
And who are you targeting to be a part of the Ignite HQ community?
We actually have three targets, if you will. We have those people who are actually creating a startup and want to build a business, and we'll be working very closely with them. We'll be working with those people who want to be advisors and investors. So they might be looking for their next greatest investment, if you will. And we'll be working with folks who want to be mentors, who want to give back, who've been successful in their own right, and want to actually take it a step further and work with startup companies.
Well, Nancy, I know that Ignite HQ only recently opened its doors. Are there any Ignite HQ success stories you want to share with us?
We did just open our doors late last year, but we do have a success story already. A company called Tree Cabin, and it's run by a student, Paul Ngali, who is has gotten a provisional patent on streaming textbooks. It's kind of like your Netflix of textbooks. And with that whole industry, a textbook now can be streamed and a student can get it much cheaper. It'll be like a subscription model. You can still highlight in it, write notes in it, all of that, but it won't be $200. You'll get to buy a textbook for like 10, 20 bucks a quarter or a semester. And then you can give it back or you can hang on to it. But now it's going to be a lot cheaper. But more importantly, in this new technology world, kids don't like to carry textbooks anymore.
That's right.
And if you think about it, all the chemistry textbooks in the world have to be reprinted right now because there's a new periodic table. So that we've got three new things to add to that. So I think this is really exciting. The textbook companies are partnering with him this summer on a beta. So companies like McGraw-Hill and Pearson are really excited about it because, as you know, if you've been to college, once the textbook comes to the college, then it gets bought the first time. Well, they can turn it back in and resell it a dozen times as a used textbook. The company that produced that textbook gets nothing if it gets sold as a used textbook. So they're like really excited about this opportunity.
And what did you call it again?
It's called Tree Cabin.
Tree Cabin.
Yep.
Okay.
So you have to look them up. They're phenomenal. It's six students. Paul actually graduated from high school at like 16. He's an engineering student at KSU, and then he's got several other guys that are working with him. A couple are in marketing, some others in computer science that are doing the development work, and then some other engineers.
Wow.
It's a really cool, exciting story.
That is so cool.
Yeah, we love working with them every day.
That's fantastic. I think kids should have to carry textbooks myself.
Yeah.
It makes them a little stronger.
Right?
They should have to walk uphill, you know, in the snow. We're talking with Nancy Watley from Ignite HQ, located right there on the Marietta Square, where inventors go.
Yes. We're going to be on the Marietta
Square.
So
is there a big event to announce the open house, let people come out and see? When would this new move take place?
Well, we're working on that now, so we'll get back to you on that. Our lease was just signed in the last week. So we do have a facility right now. We're in a temporary facility up in Kennesaw, really close to the Kennesaw campus of KSU in Fuller's Chase. And so we do have that facility open and
soon to be Marietta Square. So stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. And they'll have a beautiful facility there where you can come out and get involved and probably then events happening on a regular basis.
Yeah, as we build out, we're going to have some hard hat tours and all to get the community excited about it because this facility is not just for KSU students, faculty, and staff. It's for the Cobb and North Georgia community. So we'll be working with some of the other universities. We're trying to pull people down from Cherokee and and over from Douglasville. I mean, we want to be a center for the North Georgia region.
And from your perspective and working with all these young entrepreneurs, what's some good first steps? If you could give that advice to a young entrepreneur now out there who would like to take their idea to market, what are some good first steps?
I think the first step is that whole customer discovery. While you can think of an idea, you probably need to walk through all the things that have to happen with that. Can you produce it at a cost that people can buy it? Is there really a market for it? So there's a lot of those types of things. We do have an event on June the 28th that we're going to do just kind of a customer discovery. Come check out. If you've got an idea, come and, you know, just kind of check out what you might need to do first. But mm-hmm. that's kind of the first step. And then, of course, if you've already got a company kind of going, you need to make sure that, you know, do you need an attorney to help you with your intellectual property or to get your corporate documents all set up? Do you need some help in getting it marketed and getting it pushed out to the community? And what we would do is we would help you with whatever stage you're in. That's where we want to step in and say, okay, let's help you and find the right people to collaborate with you to move it forward.
It's very good advice. Excellent. And certainly something people can do today to get started.
Exciting. Absolutely. Very exciting. And Nancy, we're going to come back to you.
Great.
But right now I want to introduce Andrew McConnell, CEO of Rented. And Andrew, I want you to tell us about everything about Rented, but I also want you to tell the audience the story about how you got the idea for Rented.
They're pretty intertwined, I guess.
Okay.
So Rented.com is, if you're familiar with companies like Airbnb or VRBO, it is the wholesale market behind that retail market. So if Airbnb or VRBO are kind of like a booking.com or Expedia to book a night or a week at a time, mm-hmm. what rented.com enables owners of vacation homes or investment properties to do is rent out the entire year or multiple years in one go. And that's because instead of advertising those properties and listings to individual consumers looking to book a night or a week, the other side of our marketplace is comprised of 600 of the best professional management companies in the world. And they're all competing and bidding against each other to buy those weeks from you. So you just compare the offers, say, hey, this management company has 50 properties locally. They really know the industry. They're going to give me the best money. That's who I want to work with. Or this company has 50,000 properties globally. I like their balance sheet. That's who I want to work with. But it's a personal decision. And we created that marketplace just to make sure homeowners get the best deal possible without having to do all the work of doing it themselves on Airbnb or VRBO or whatever.
Well, okay, I got two questions. The first one is, okay, if I had a beach house and I wanted someone to rent it for me, if I walked through your door, what would you tell me?
Yeah, so exactly. Say you have a place in Destin, right? You have a beach house and you get there 4 weeks a year. So it's sitting empty 48 weeks a year. And you've heard about this whole Airbnb and VRBO thing. You say, well, I could rent it out and I could maybe cover some of my costs or make a little money. How much can I rent it out for? So traditionally, you had two options. You'd go to a management company down there and every management company would have a different contract. And one would say, here, I'm going to charge you 40 cents of every dollar that comes in, but I'm not going to tell you how much I'm going to bring in. And another said, well, I would do it for 35 cents on a dollar. But what they're not telling you is they have all these hidden fees. And so they're actually going to charge you really 45% at the end of the day. So then you say, well, maybe I don't trust these guys. I'm going to go do this myself. So I'm going to put it up on VRBO. And in VRBO's own marketing materials, they'll tell you it's going to take you 8.4 hours every single week to deal with emails coming in, phone calls coming in, calling the plumber when the toilet gets backed up and you have a guest there at 2 a.m. And so you find these people that are successful and wealthy and able to afford second homes then end up picking up a second job trying to manage it. And we said, well, this is crazy. You know, it doesn't make sense to do all this work yourself. And why are you not working with these professionals? I said, well, people would say they're taking too big a cut and they're making me take the financial risk. I said, well, those professionals don't have a job without homes like yours. So why don't you make them take the financial risk? Why don't you make them only take the cut you think they're worth?
I like it.
Yeah. And my friends, this was a conversation over lunch and two family friends looked at me like I was an idiot and said, well, of course, if there was a way to do that, everybody would just do that. I said, well, everybody sounds like a lot of people. How big is this industry? So I started looking it up and it was at that time, $100 billion industry.
Wow.
And at that time, Airbnb was a $2.5 billion company. HomeAway had IPO'd at $2.2 billion. HouseTrip, I mean, had been valued over $1 billion. FlipKey was owned by TripAdvisor. There were hundreds of these.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to stop you there because I want you to explain to our audience what Airbnb is, because I just realized what Airbnb was the other day because I think they were on 60 Minutes or something where, and I didn't even know about that until then. So explain that to our audience.
Yeah. So Airbnb is this concept of renting out empty spaces. So it could be you have a spare bedroom, right? Your kids went off to college and now you're trying to pay for college and you have these empty bedrooms in your house. You can rent those out and host people in your house and make money off of it. Or if you have an investment property, you can rent it out for the whole year and rent it out night or week at a time. And it's a fascinating story on its own. I mean, the guys got started. They went to Rhode Island School of Design. One of the co-founders is actually from Brookhaven. His dad was on the Brookhaven City Council, Joe Gebbia. And so he and this guy, Brian Chesky, had gone to college together at Rhode Island School of Design and moved to San Francisco and could barely pay rent. And there was a big design conference coming in town. And so they said, well, all the hotels are full. We have some space here. Mm-hmm. Maybe let's buy some airbeds and put up a site and see if anybody wants to stay here. And so they had a guy from India, a lady from Germany, and one other person who came. And they said, well, if they're going to be here, we should cook them breakfast. So they made them waffles and all that. And so they called it airbed and breakfast because they were airbeds. Right. And they cooked them breakfast. And they ended up becoming really good friends with these people. I mean, they went to the guy's wedding in India and they still stay in touch with everybody. And they said, well, there might be a business behind this. And their most recent valuation was over $25 billion.
Yeah. So $25
billion? Yeah. So they are valued at multiples of what Starwood just got acquired for.
Wildly successful. But, you know, in America, this is a new concept, but they've been doing this thing all over the world for years. Yeah. I once visited Oktoberfest in Germany and stayed in a family's house. Yeah. In the spare bedroom, me and six other army guys, and they cooked us breakfast. We liked it so much, we went back 3 weekends in a row. And so they've been doing this in other places.
They call it home share.
Yeah. But it was the same kind of concept. But now it's actually a real thing in America that people can make money out of.
They can make a lot of money. Yeah. Apparently.
There was that movie where Cameron Diaz and they switched.
Holiday. Was that called Holiday?
Holiday or something where, you know, she went there and the other one came
back. Right. Right. I mean, people have been, you know, swapping houses, you know, that's been around. But, you know, how brilliant to, you know, actually turn a profit on it.
Right. I mean, you can turn your empty bedroom or you can turn your house when you're going on vacation for a month into a hotel, basically, and make the money off of it. And the issue that you have and that they had early on is a lack of professionalism. You know, you stayed with a great German family. You had a great experience. They cooked you breakfast. Some people show up and
it may not be.
There have been violent encounters. There were photos of one here in Atlanta that there were advertisements for this party up in this house in Buckhead, and photos got posted all over social media. There were drugs, there were guns, there was all sorts. And this was just a nice couple thought they were renting out their house.
Yeah.
So the real danger comes in this lack of professionalism or transparency. And that's really where we come in and saying, look, you can't vet every guest yourself. You can't be on call 24/7. Why not let a professional do this for you and pay you for the privilege of managing your home?
So going back to rented, you do this. Do you do this just for like houses or do you do any kind of space?
We do any kind of space. I mean, for the professional management, they really don't want the spare bedroom because they can't control the experience. If you're living in the bedroom next door, the professional company can't say, well, I know you're not going to do something creepy to people while they're there. So they really want the full house. We have people that rent boats and other assets on the platform. The idea behind Rented is it doesn't just have to be real estate, but predominantly it really is.
But it could be a condo. It could be a mobile home, beach house, mountain house.
Could it be a houseboat?
Houseboat.
There are houseboats in Seattle and India. So we're on five continents.
Wow.
Probably 100 or more markets in the U.S. So it's really all over.
Your average consumer, though, is that individual or family who owns a second home.
Right. It's somebody, and it could be a couple that they bought it, and now they just don't go as much anymore. Or it could be, I bought it at the peak, and now it's hard to make ends meet. I need to make some money off of it. Could be, we have a lot of people that are just pure investors. They get into the business and they have five or six of these.
Yeah.
And they say, look, just give me the best returns. This is a great deal for them.
How are you meeting these people? How are you actively letting them know your services are available and different from VRBO and these other websites?
Yeah, that is the big thing is awareness for us. I mean, we do everything. We do digital marketing, Facebook, AdWords. We do direct mail. We do events and direct sales calls. And what we find when we contact these people is really about 70% of the time, people say, thank you so much. I had no idea this was something that existed. And we say, well, it didn't. We created it. This is a new thing. I mean, we literally wrote the Wikipedia page for guaranteed rentals. So if you go to Wikipedia and look up guaranteed rental,
it wasn't there before.
It wasn't a thing that existed. It used to always be these commission contracts. And what we created was this idea that a manager would actually guarantee you the rental for the year. They would take the financial risk and they would do all the work for you.
And so how are you different from like Expedia and Travelocity, those companies?
So I'd equate it, if we step back, think of Expedia like Publix. Okay, so if I go to Expedia, I'm looking to book a night or I'm looking to book one flight. Just like if I go to Publix, I'm looking to buy three bananas or one banana. But Expedia works with the airlines, who are the wholesalers, who have all the flights that they distribute through there. Just like Publix, they have to go and get the bananas. And they don't work with every little farmer in Costa Rica to buy this bushel of bananas, this bushel. There's a wholesaler in the middle that takes that individual farmer and gets it to Publix. What we do is connect those individual farmers, which are the homeowners, those individual homes, with the big professional companies, the Wyndhams of the world, the Vacasas of the world, so that they can then distribute through Airbnb or Expedia or any of those places.
It's a B2B via a B2C.
Exactly.
Right.
We're the first C2B business that I know.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is a riding, is it B2C? No, it's B2C.
It's kind of
all, yeah.
Andrew, what is the most extravagant place or a house or yacht that you've handled? I'm just curious.
Yeah, it was probably this like 15 bedroom ski and ski out in Steamboat Springs with multiple jacuzzis and floor to ceiling glass for three stories. And it was a really nice one. I mean, we have properties that go, we've had deals as little for the year as 9,000 and up to $500,000 to $1 million for the year. So it's a pretty wide range of the type of properties that end up. And it's just for basically any kind of property, there's a manager that wants that kind of property. So there's nothing too small or too low end or too high end. Mm-hmm. There's demand all over.
And I've got something here in my notes about blogging.
Yes.
What do you blog?
We do. Yeah. So I do. I personally blog, and it got to be so random that the company made me take it off the company blog, and I have to do it through LinkedIn and Medium. But I blog on. I recently had a baby, so four and a half month old. So I do a lot of these parallels of parenting and startups and kind of cultivating these two babies and the learning experience.
Nancy's shaking her head yes over here.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like having a baby. From somebody who's owned their own business before, I can tell you it's...
Have you had a baby before?
No, I have not.
Oh, interesting.
How's that? Yeah. I mean, it's just, oh my God. If having a baby was like what I went through, I'm glad I didn't make that decision. Yeah.
And to do both at the same time.
You're so nuts.
Yeah, it's crazy. You didn't think you get sleep before, and then now you really don't get sleep. So
it's definitely 24/7 running a business. Yeah.
But you wouldn't consider yourself a startup now, though, would you?
It's a funny thing. I mean, when we were talking about the incubator and attracting startups, startup isn't a title, it's a phase. So no company wants to be a startup. You want to be out of startup mode as soon as possible. Right. Startup is just about...
We'll be grown up.
Yeah, it's just quick iteration, learning, saying, can I find product market fit? And once I can do that, then you move to growth and scale and other pieces. And so, I mean, it's an arbitrary definition, whether we're a startup or not. At this stage... Yes, we are the only player doing this. And yes, not everybody, but 70% of people who hear about it say, yes, I want this, but we still don't have full market awareness. I mean, Airbnb, like I said, it's a $25 billion company now. They started in 2008 and you just heard of them.
Yeah.
Right? Some people would still consider them a startup and they're worth $25 billion.
Yeah.
Uber, it's worth $62.5 billion.
It's not a startup anymore.
Yeah, but some people would label it, right? It's worth twice as much as GM, but is it a startup? So how do you define that? Because they're still... trying to, in that growth mode, trying to figure out how do I do the next thing? Neither of them are profitable right now. So are they a sustainable company yet? Are they still a startup? That's a long-winded way to say, I have no clue what the blue label is.
Yeah, right.
My only concern is, are we building the best product for our customers? Right. And whatever label you put on, it's kind of arbitrary.
And you're saying did you start this or do you have a partner that started Rented?
Yeah, so I started with a co-founder. So this all came out to your point of how did it get started was that conversation I just kind of replayed. I was on vacation with my family in Turks and Caicos. And it was two friends who had houses on VRBO. One had a place in Destin, another place in Vermont. and ran through that conversation. Why are you doing this yourself? You're a cardiologist. You're a dentist with your own practice. Your time's worth like $500 an hour. This is insane. And they said, well, because I don't trust these management companies. They're not taking the financial risk. So, well, make them compete. They will take it. And I said, well, of course, everybody would do that. So that day I emailed my now co-founder, who we had gone to college together. I swam at Harvard and he was a baseball player. And after college, he went and played professional baseball for a while and then went into real estate. That's what he had been doing the whole time. And so I said, hey, you're the guy that knows real estate. Have you ever heard of anything like this? And he said, I don't think so. I mean, they're developers that will lease back properties to help sell them. They may do a 2 or 3 year lease, but I've never heard of a marketplace for this. And we kept talking, and every owner we would talk to, people we didn't even know had a vacation home, would say, wait, can I use you? Can I work with you? And we said, no, we don't have a company. We don't have a name. We don't have a website. But this seems really big. And we kept talking to our wives. You know, his wife's a physician. My wife's an attorney. And our wife said, guys, you're just not that smart. Like, this is the most obvious idea I've ever heard. There are 20 companies out there doing this. And we both looked back and said, we agree we're not that smart, but there really isn't anybody doing this. I think we're really going to regret not going after this $100 billion opportunity. Yeah. So that was back in 2012. And it in January came up with the idea, convinced my wife to let me go on full-time November 2012. And my co-founder, Mickey, came on full-time March of 2013. So it was a slow sales process. And I think if they realized how long it would take to get that product market fit, they would have never even agreed to that. But I think everybody's happy about how it's been turning out thus far.
And so your goal now is to get your name, your brand out there.
Yeah, it's, look, there's some homeowners, Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, they're never going to rent out any second home they have. No amount of money is going to make them put a stranger in their bed. That's just not a thing that's going to happen. We're not trying to convince them to do so. There are other people that say, look, it's not really about the money for me. I really enjoy hosting people. I mean, maybe these that German family, they don't need the money. They just really like meeting travelers. Right. They love it. And again, we're a terrible option for them because we're saying, you don't get to do this anymore. It's going to be a professional. But there's a huge segment of homeowners who say, look, I just like having the home. I like to go when I want and to enjoy it. But I hate when I go doing yard work, doing touch-up paint, doing spring cleaning. I hate all that. And you're saying you have someone who wants to pay me $5,000 a month to do that for me? That sounds pretty good, right? And for those people, we just want them to know we're an option. Because right now, so many people don't. You know, there are probably 9 million second homes in the U.S.
Wow. Okay. That's
a lot, right? Right. We still have a lot of people just in the U.S., much less the rest of the world.
Some of them, and probably half of those are going unused, right?
60% aren't rented out.
60% at all. You know, right? Yeah. And are just, you know, are dark.
Yeah,
no one's even in there. So if we can start getting people in there, realizing the consumer has options with their rental home.
Exactly.
And not, like you said, not just like, hey, let's get somebody checked in and checked out on a weekly rhythm, but the upkeep, the maintenance, microwave goes out. All of a sudden, while there's guests in there for that week, you've got to get somebody there to fix that microwave immediately.
Yeah.
Otherwise, that family's going to do a bad review about you online, and who knows where you're going to go from there. So I have friends who have rental homes and they do it through VRBO and some of these other channels and they do experience some of these pains that you're talking about.
Send them our way. We pay $250 for every referral.
So, all right. Tell them Ryan Redhawk sent you.
Okay. Well, Andrew, tell our audience how they can get in touch with you.
The best is rented.com is our website. We're on Twitter at rented.com. And my personal Twitter is at M.A. McConnell, M-C-C-O-N-N-E-L-L. And then obviously we're on Facebook and LinkedIn and Instagram and it's all rented.com. So, yeah.
And Nancy, how can our audience get in touch with you?
At nancy@ignitehq.co.
Okay.
And my Twitter is Nancy W. Watley.
Okay. And all this information will be on the posting that goes on our website. Well, let's just open up discussion now. Nancy, if you have questions for Andrew or Andrew, if you have questions, comments for Nancy.
Well, I just sitting here listening to you, I'm always interested in hearing the stories, but our startups that we talk to day in and day out are always saying, you know, what have you heard? Tell us, you know, what's the worst thing that could happen? So what advice would you give to other startups that you might pass along that, I mean, every person out there that wants to start a business has a million questions, but you being a recent startup, what advice would you give?
It's funny because I had this conversation. A guy was leaving BCG and called me last night asking for advice. And what I told him was almost exactly what you had just said was, don't get caught up in fundraising and all this. Go figure out, do you have something customers want? Go through the customer discovery process. Not finding office space may be better because you won't get caught up in the social scene of a WeWork or anything. You'll just have to go talk to customers. Don't think you're so smart and get all caught up with your ideas. Really force yourself to deal with customers. And
you mean don't focus on your website? You mean actually go find a customer?
Right.
I mean, like, cash isn't cash unless it's cash.
Yeah. So it's a funny thing that, you know, when we started, we went to an accelerator program up in Durham, the Startup Factory, in early 2013. And
that's a great program.
Yeah, we thought it was fantastic. And, you know, it goes off the Lean Startup methodology. Mm-hmm. And then so you read it and I knew everything. I said, well, that's great for a lot of other companies. For us, we're dealing with these multi-million dollar assets. It needs to be like a Chase Bank. We're going to have to, there's no lean here. And so I spent a ton of money with the Indian dev shop that we threw away all the code. And our MVP, our minimum viable product that we launched with and started getting customers, was Gmail and Excel spreadsheets that we would just crank the phones, get people to sign up, run the auctions, email back out. And we got enough traction that we had customers. We were able to hire an engineer and grow from there. And then a year later, we were able to actually launch a real site. But we were able to raise money off that because we had real customers. We showed real demand for what we were doing. It didn't take all this fanciness. You just had to show, do people want what you're trying to offer? And if not, learn what they actually do want.
So would you come tell that story to our startups?
Absolutely. I'd love to. Hey, yeah,
great. That'd be fantastic.
Got another program for the book.
Right.
That would be
right.
Great.
Yeah. And then, I mean, I really like what you're doing. We're at ATDC, which is a similar thing associated with Georgia Tech.
We are exactly. In fact, we have partnered with ATDC on several programs. One of their catalysts is going to come help us with the customer discovery program June the 28th.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, we're very similar. The only real difference is we will have some co-working space that is, not associated with the incubator accelerator programs.
Yeah, which...
But we're... Yeah, absolutely.
I'm sure ATDC would kind of like to do that. It's probably more space constrained than anything.
It's space. Yeah. I mean, in talking with Jen I mean, it's space for sure for them.
And your point on the OTP side, I don't know if you know Switchyard Downtown Club with Dave Payne.
Of course, of course.
And this is a conversation Dave and I have a lot, which is... the startup hotness out there, right? Everybody wants to be the next Uber, the next Airbnb. Well, there are about two of those every 20 years. So
truth is, there's not going to, there's going to be more failure than, and what we're trying to do is help them fail fast,
right?
As opposed to spending all this money and all this time on something that's not going to move forward.
Chasing a fruitless dream for 10 years when you can find out in 10 weeks.
Where I was going to go with it though, is not being Uber does not make you a failure. So there's a lot of people. There are two reasons you could go want to do a startup, or three. One, I think it's cool, right? I saw the ping pong tables and the foosball tables and the beer fridge. That's great. That's the worst thing you could possibly do. Please leave. Yeah. Don't do this. The other is that you want to create the next Uber or Airbnb. And that's where the fail fast, really learn, like burn it out, move to the next thing. And you're just trying to figure out what is that next big thing is great. There's a third group that I think comes a lot out of the 08 recession. And it's this concern on job security and people saying, look, I don't need to work 70 hours and make $500,000 a year. I really would rather be able to control my own schedule. And if I can find a nice business that's an earner that maybe I can pull enough income to live off of, that's enough for me. Right. And that works. You just can't take institutional investment for that. No one's going to invest in that little business, but that doesn't mean it's a bad business.
Right. And that's one of the very basic premises of why we were created by Cobb County is they want to create economic development and workforce opportunity in the county and in that region. And to do that, a lot of times it's not moving new companies in, it's creating those companies. And how many jobs can these startups create? And it's not going from one to, 50,000, it's one to 30, one to 50, one to 100. That is economic development in the region. And we want to keep our students that are graduating from our universities in Atlanta. There's so many things going on in Atlanta that make it a great place for millennials and just a great place to live, work, and play. And you don't necessarily have to be inside the perimeter to do that. There's a lot going on. So let's keep our graduates here and create opportunity and companies.
And we have a lot of, CEOs and top companies come through this studio. And one thing that we've learned about, and they've learned about millennials, is they don't want the big McMansion. They don't want, you know, to hoard all the money. They're more concerned with, I want to make a living, but I also want to live my life. I want to have a family. They don't want to be like their parents that was just work, 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 work. You know, it's very different, and they're okay with having less.
It's amazing how many of my friends are selling their home in the suburbs and moving into an apartment just because they don't want all that extra stuff.
It's
they
work.
Do want to have flexibility, and they do. I mean, that the needs, like you say, the McMansion. Nope, that's
they,
kind of
yeah,
don't
want
need.
It.
And all of this ties together because that's how Airbnb works. That's how Uber takes off, is that Airbnb, it's this desire, it's this want for authenticity of experience. And that experience isn't just when you travel, I want to embed in the neighborhood, but it's the experience of my life. I want to have control over. I want to make sure I'm doing the things that I actually enjoy. And it's not about buying a bigger TV. I mean, most of these people don't even own a TV. I don't own a TV, right? You don't need one. My wife and I got rid of a car and we share one because of Uber. And it's the same with Uber. People sign up every time. Talk to your driver. Why do you do this? I love the flexibility. It allows me to work the hours I want. If I don't need it, I don't have to work. 90% of the time, that's their answer. And it's not everybody needs to be the next Travis Kalanick to have the next Uber, right? But it's not a failure to create a 50-person, $5 to $10 million business as long as you didn't go raise $50 million to do that, right? If you grow that organically,
point.
If you grow that organically, that's a great success. If you're fab.com and you raise $350 million to sell at five, that was not a success. That's not a good path to take.
Well, and I think a lot of the facilities like we're creating give startups and give people who have these ideas the ability not to have to sink their entire life savings into it right off the bat. They don't have to sign a five-year lease with a personal guarantee on a building facility, but they can get out of their basement and they can come and collaborate with other people. And, you know, sitting here listening to you, and I wrote down, you know, just some questions, what would you say to other people about, and, you know, there's a litany of things, but for somebody to walk across the hall and say, you know, hey, what did you do when this happened? Or who would you recommend I talk to? Or how would you tell me to go out and build my brand? Well, I can tell you what doesn't work, or I can tell you this did work. I mean, there's so much to be said for collaboration and not having to fork out your entire life savings. And, you know, from that 08 recession, there are a lot of people who either lost their jobs or chose to retire early because they had the opportunity. And it's too early to retire, but the only money they have is the money they have in their retirement. And I mean, you don't want to go after that because that's going to go pretty quickly. So, you know, being able to come to a facility like ours, but like you say, you're bootstrapping it. You've downsized to one car using Uber. I mean, that's a great story. That's a phenomenal story.
Yeah. I mean, I'll just build on that collaboration point. The two most impactful, most helpful things for me for ATDC is each Friday we do the CEO roundtable lunch.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And so you just bring your biggest issue and you talk, and three people may have gone through the same thing or are currently going through the same thing, and you can problem solve it. After this, I'm going straight to ATV to go meet with two other CEOs to work through sales funnel issues. We're saying we're all kind of struggling with the same thing. How are you thinking about it? So that access to other people working through or who have worked through the same thing, completely invaluable.
Talking about that, I will say that what I've found since joining and trying to create Ignite HQ is that the community of these facilities, ATDC, David at Atlanta Tech Village, Michael Tavani in Switchyards, Flatiron City, Industrious, I mean, all of these facilities, everybody is so willing to share and to help and to, you know, to let me tell you what I did right, what I did wrong. This is how you can make your facility bigger, better, more productive. I mean, it is a group of folks who really do want to see startups and entrepreneurs succeed. It's been phenomenal what people have done to help me.
They take the mindset of, you're not eating my piece of the pie, you're growing the pie. Everybody's here to grow the pie.
Well, we were doing an event with ATDC last fall, and they had over, you know, 150 community members that are part of ATDC, but live in Cobb County. And they don't want to go into the city every day. So they're like, hey, let's find them a place up in Cobb County to go and collaborate. Yeah. And so we've been working to try and figure out how we can work, help those folks. It's a natural community, a natural thing. So yeah, we're not competing. There's something for everyone. And like, you know, some of them are more B2C, some of them are more technology, you know, just apps, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Some of them are more on the prototyping and, you know, need millwork and lab space and things like that. So it's all over the board, but we all want to help.
I mean, I think that's because this is Atlanta. We're the South. We everybody here is helpful, has manners, is polite. You know, and so in business, it resonates a little bit. And so I would like to think that that's the reason, because we are Atlanta.
Yeah. And guys, just to kind of start wrapping things up, Nancy, you talked about how you're trying to keep millennials here in Atlanta. Well, we have a lot of people that come through here that they came to Atlanta. They're transplants. What do you think it is about Atlanta that brings people from all over to live here and work here?
Well, I mean, obviously, I think Atlanta is a phenomenal place from just the activities that you can do. We have sports. We have the arts. We have places to go to ride your bike. We have the suburbs. We have the urban center and core. We have great sports teams. We have everything. We have four seasons a year. There's so much that you can do, but more importantly, you can afford to do it here.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, it's a great place to grow up and to raise your kids. We have great school systems. We have, you know, everything. And of course, you know, there's a lot going on wherever you want to live, but we are truly a great place to live, work, and play. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's part of it.
Yeah, Andrew,
we have the biggest airport. I mean, the busiest
airport.
You can get anywhere you want to. You can get to all these places that Rented is renting. So,
exactly.
Yeah.
We're an international city. But I don't know about the great sports teams. The Braves are like the worst in baseball this year. But we have been at times.
We have been.
But everything else, I totally agree with.
Well, we have the Bulldogs. So that's you know, true. For me, that's what we need.
We think so similarly. I mean, my wife's from London.
Oh, nice.
And we moved here in 08, and her take is the same thing. Is we're a big enough city. We get everything. All the concerts come through. We have the big sports teams. We get great art shows. We get the symphony. All this stuff comes here. But if we're in London, everything would go to rent and just surviving. And here we can afford to do it all. It's amazing.
Right.
And we live right in Midtown. I walk to work. My wife walks to work. That's how we can have one car. We barely ever use it. It has 3,000 miles on it. The other piece is I lived in Boston for 8 years for school. And my takeaway, and I always try to tell this to people up there, is the only reason you live in the Northeast is because you don't know any better. You don't realize how much better it is. And so, I mean, we have Harvard grads, we have Penn grads, we have people moved down from Boston all over that come down and they just try to recruit all their friends. Like, you have no idea how nice the weather is, how nice the people are. My apartment's three times the size as these iBankers that are making a ton of money. And oh, by the way, I can actually enjoy the nice weather and everything because I'm not working at IBM.
You don't have to shovel sunshine here in Atlanta.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Well, as somebody that was born and raised here in Atlanta, I don't know any better than what I have here, but I don't think I can go anywhere else and find anything quite as great either.
It's called San Diego.
Yeah.
I think Southern California thinks that about the rest of the country. Yes. But yeah.
But you can't afford to live here.
That's
it's
true.
Still, I mean, it's cheaper than San Francisco. So nice. San Diego is an incredible.
The West Coast is nice, but we here in Atlanta love our community and love the businesses and the people, and we love to let them shine here on Atlanta Business Radio each week. And so we certainly did that here today for sure.
Yes. Andrew and Nancy, thank you so much for being on the show. And I hope you guys will come back in the future and give us an update about what's going on with Ignite and with Rented. I would love for you guys to come back in the studio. This has just been an absolute pleasure. And if your business is doing something exciting and you would like to be featured on Business Radio X, reach out to us on the contact page at businessradiox.com. Special thanks to our producer, Ryan Redhawk McPherson. All right, my friends, thank you for listening. I'm Alex Gossett-Shiflett, your hostess with the mostest. And as always, I'm wondering who will be my next guest on Business Radio X.